Welcome to another edition of Jedi and Germs, a weekly podcast brought to you by Torn by Sports and blogtalkradio.com. I'm Alan Zog, the Jedi. He's John English, the Germs guy. Hello, John.
Hello.
Right as we speak, the Jazz look to be closing out win number 3 in a row, I believe, correct? Is that 3 in a row?
I think so.
3 in a row and 7 out of their last
should be
8.
14 and 9 overall.
Yep.
As long as they close this, they've still got 17 seconds left, but it looks like they're going to go ahead and hang on. This will be the 3rd win in a row. It'll be 7 of the last 8. And this is one where Hood went out in the second quarter and has not returned. Phoenix made a run. The game was tied at one point, but the Jazz have kicked into gear. And so with the team of Mack, Hayward, Ingles, Johnson, and Gobert, they're closing this thing out.
Well,
and
before
we missed a 3. Okay, this is over.
Is it done? Pretty much.
No, they just fouled Hayward, so he's going to go shoot free throws. Yeah.
All right.
This is it.
I gotta tell all of Jedi and Germs listeners out there, hey, last week's show was good. John, Devin, you guys were great. Sorry I missed out.
Tell us something we don't know.
Oh, ouch. Wow. Devin, little humble pie for you. Do you need some?
Nope.
All right.
We're past Thanksgiving. I had some pumpkin pie, so I think I'm good.
No, I'm glad you guys did well last week. I wish I was there because you guys talked about some stuff that was kind of tops on my mind too, and wanted to really get into the Hill versus, the Hill and Hayward duo, the Mack versus Exum conversation, which is continuing. Fans are baffled why, it hasn't continued as much because Exum has now started the last, 3 games? But,
there can't be that much controversy. I mean, it's so clear the past week or so that Mack is outplaying Exum.
Absolutely it is.
I mean,
I was talking off air with Devin before you came on, right when I first got here. I no discredit to Exum because I really like Exum's game. I like him a lot. I am looking forward to the future. And hey, before we even started the season, the three of us were talking. I think all three of us felt like Exum could very well be starting by the middle of the season. But the way things are looking, no, it's not going to be there because, one, the Jazz are clearly better when Hill is playing at the point. And two, Exum is not there. He's had moments and flashes, but he's not there. And like you said, Mack has clearly been playing better on both ends of the floor. Let's be honest, on both ends of the floor for the last week or two over what Exum was doing.
Yeah. Now this game tonight, Exum looked like he was going to have a good game, but he got into foul trouble. And
yes, he did.
There were some terrible calls on him where you're just like, why are you picking on Dante Exum?
Yeah,
so he only got 17 minutes this game.
Yeah, there was one call earlier I had an issue with, and I think it was on Bledsoe, and it was really a touch foul early on in the game when Bledsoe got an and one, was it? I think, and he scored a layup, and Exum got almost like a touch foul on him. I didn't like that call, but then there's a couple of offensive fouls, though, that Dante's just got to be better than that. You know, using his right arm, extending when he's dribbling, or left arm, whatever it is, you got to be better than that. You can't give up an offensive foul like that.
Yeah.
So, overall, tonight's game, fourth quarter troubles continue, John. The Jazz continue to, it almost seems like, fall asleep heading into the fourth quarter. Is that a fair assessment?
I mean, part of it you can say is because Hood was out. So they didn't have their same, they didn't have the rotation in the second half they thought they were going to have from the first half. And so you have another game where, or let's just say you have another half where you don't have Hill or Hood or Favors, and you got to have the other guys step up. Exum is in foul trouble early. Mac was great tonight, so that was nice. But then you start the fourth quarter and nobody can make a shot. And at one point, I don't know what they ended up finally in that fourth quarter, but at one point they were 1 of 10 in field goals in the fourth quarter. They just were not making their shots, and then Phoenix would run down and make a three, and then Jazz would come back and miss a shot. Phoenix would run down, make another three. And you just watched it slip away, and it's like slow motion horror. So yeah, they need to figure that stuff out. When you have a team that you've pretty much killed, you're up by 20 at halftime, you've completely demoralized them, and yet you let them come back like that, and then suddenly, you know, if they're down by 20, they're dejected, but when they cut it to 12, they get a little more pep, and then they cut it to 8 and they get that much more excited, and the momentum was just going their way right up until it was a tie. And all of a sudden, you have one of the worst teams in the league believing that they can win this road game. You can't allow that.
No, you can't.
You know, ultimately, they prevailed, but it was scary there for a while.
Well, and you mentioned that their offensive woes in the fourth quarter. They do. And the other night, what was it, the game against Denver? The same thing happened. The Jazz struggled to make a shot in that fourth quarter against Denver that I was at Saturday night. And then again against the Lakers last night, they struggled to get shots to fall in the fourth quarter. But here, let me make a case, though. When your shots aren't falling, you've still got to find a way to prevent the other team from scoring. It's called, you know, you got to go back on the other end of the court and defend. And it seems like the Jazz have some defensive lapses in the fourth quarter. They did again tonight. You know, I was on the drive on the way here to do the show, listening to Locke talk about the fact that the Jazz had given up three made threes all night long till the fourth quarter. And then you had Brandon Knight and Devin Booker hit two in a row. And it's what you'd built up and done so well for three quarters, suddenly you've forgotten.
Yeah, here's okay. I'm just gonna go through this section of play by play in the fourth quarter. Joe Johnson misses. Alex Len makes. Boris Diaw misses. Brandon Knight makes. Dante Exum misses. Alex Len misses. Joe Ingles misses. Brandon Knight makes. And at that point they took Withy out, and at that point it had gone from like they were up 18 to up 13, I think, at that point. And then Boris Diaw misses, Brandon Knight misses, Exum offensive foul turnover. Gordon Hayward gets free throws, Leandro Barbosa makes, then you have another turnover, then Boris Diaw misses, then you have free throws, then Gordon Hayward misses. And then finally, at 5:33, the first field goal made by a Jazz person in the fourth quarter was at 5:33 to go. So,
I bet, man, you could do the same thing. Route. I bet you could do the same thing for that Laker game last night. I almost guarantee you, in the fourth quarter, you could probably read down that play by play, and it would almost match verbatim what you just read off from tonight. And that's the point I'm getting at. That's the third game in a row where that's happened in the fourth quarter. Is there reason to throw up red flags and be concerned? I mean, you're right. No Rodney Hood in the fourth quarter tonight. But what about last night when he did play? What about Saturday night? I'm just wondering, is there reason to have red flags in the fourth quarter for the Jazz team that is up 16-20 in any one of those three nights against subpar opponents, but struggles? I mean, what's going to happen against Golden State on Thursday night? You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Well, I saw a couple of guys on Twitter floating that maybe with the Montan Yunus having his problems in Houston, that maybe he's going to become free agent and that the Jazz might be interested in actually pursuing him. And the only reason you would be to shore up your big moment rotation. And while Dia and Withy have been playing better, Monta Yunus would be an upgrade, and therefore maybe they would consider him getting that. And if they're looking at their fourth quarter woes, you know, part of it is because we don't have favors, and so we're playing a lot of Dia and Lyles and Withy, and you know, it's usually those are the guys on the floor when the other teams are going through these runs and the Jazz are going through their dry spells.
By the way, I don't know if you saw the news, but Houston did match Monta Ellis' contract. He's there.
He is?
Yeah.
But skipped his physical.
Huh?
He skipped his physical.
I didn't see that. I just remember seeing on, I thought it was on Twitter that I saw yesterday that they matched the offer sheet to sign him. Finally.
Oh, well, this morning he was a no-show for his physical.
Oh, dear.
And that's why guys like David J. Smith were saying, hey, maybe the Jazz could get him.
Right. I don't know, maybe. So, any thoughts further? Devin, have you seen any of the last three games? Are you, do you have anything to add to what we're talking about here?
Yes.
Go ahead.
No, just yes, I've seen the games. I one question at a time, Alan. No,
go
ahead, John.
I just saw who his agent was. Guess who his agent is?
Who?
Think about the news this week. BJ Armstrong.
Who?
BJ Armstrong, he's Draymond Green's agent. He's the guy that said that the rules committee has never made a rule change to improve the game of basketball. And you're like, never? Never? Pulling in the three-point line, no longer using peach buckets, the 24-second shot clock. I mean, come on, man. Never?
Yeah.
I kind of like the peach buckets.
Yeah, you would like the peach buckets. I kind of like I like those baskets being hung to the trunk of a tree. There you go. Yeah, totally.
Anyway, that was just funny. Yeah, they did match, but he still skipped his physical. And the conclusion of this little thing I'm reading on ESPN says it's uncertain what the Rockets will do now regarding it. So.
All right. So
anyway, even if he does become a free agent, I don't really see the Jazz getting him because who are you going to cut? And I mean, Favors should be back soon.
I don't know that many people want to take a chance on this guy when there's this much drama just to sign or match an offer sheet and sign him. You know, this has turned out to be a bigger debacle than it really has to be.
And he only played 37 games last year. He has yet to play this year.
That's pretty sad.
And the Jazz's number one problem is health.
Yeah.
Maybe not.
Which, speaking of health, Rodney Hood goes down again tonight, as mentioned. And then there was a collective gasp across Jazz Nation in third quarter when Gordon Hayward went back to the locker room and you went, oh, crap.
Yeah.
But he came back and it was just a matter of taping that finger again. But I'll tell you what, watching that particular play and watch him grimace the way he did and walk back there, I was concerned. I don't know if anybody else was, but I was concerned for a moment. Anyway, all right. Well, let's jump topics to the next. Well, let's talk. You wanted to talk about the lopsidedness that is still the West and the East in the NBA.
Yes. Do you know how many wins the Jazz have right now?
After tonight, I believe that's 14, is it not?
14.
Yes.
14, which means they are now tied for sixth with Oklahoma City Thunder. Thunder have, well, not exactly tied. They both have 14 wins. Thunder has one less loss, so they're still in sixth. Okay, so that would put Jazz still at seventh seed in the West. Guess how many wins the number one Cleveland Cavaliers have?
How many?
14. They are 14-5. They've played four fewer games. But I just find this an interesting illustration of the difference with the West and the East. We're so used to the West dominating the East. Last year was the first time in like 16 years that the East, that the eighth eighth seed in the East had a better record than the eighth seed in the West. That does not look like it's going to be the case this year. But you also have a lot of dominant teams this year. It looks like of your top, I would say your top four teams, you've got Warriors, Spurs, Clippers, and then the Cavaliers. It looks like it's going to be business as usual with the West just having a much harder schedule, much tougher playoff roads.
It doesn't help that Atlanta has completely fallen apart.
Yes, they have. They've lost 9 of their last 10. They just don't look like they're going to be able to. I don't even know what's going on with them. I know they've had some injuries, but this whole experiment of getting rid of Teague doesn't really seem to be paying off.
I would ask if anybody's surprised at that. I'm gonna go out on a limb, say I'm not, because I wasn't so sure about Schroeder from the beginning. And it's all right. They decided to bank on him, and it's not working out so well for them.
Yeah, I was listening to Locke this morning, and he said that usually at this point in the season, 14 of the 16 teams, on average, I think is what I said, 14 of the 16 teams that would be in the playoffs if they started today do make the playoffs when the season ends. So 14 is your average. That means only two teams right now might fall out. And you look at the West. Oh, crap. Okay. You look at the West. Right now, it's Warriors, Spurs, Clippers, Rockets, Grizzlies. Won 4 in a row without Mike Conley. That's pretty impressive. Thunder, Jazz, Blazers. And then there is a 2.5 game difference between the 8th seed Blazers and the 9th seed Lakers. And, you know, the way the season's going right now, I would say that is a very bold line, that your top eight are very likely going to be your eight playoff teams at the end of the year. And then all the other teams just have their own struggles. Lakers have their own share of injuries, but they're not as deep as some other teams to be able to handle that. They've lost 3 in a row now. You know, Denver has their issues. Kings are a mess again. Pelicans have major injury issues. Anthony Davis is playing by himself. The Timberwolves still can't put it together.
By the way, of course you have Phoenix. If there is a silver lining for the Pelicans, if you call it a silver lining, Tyreek Evans looks like his time back on the floor is coming soon, very soon, from what I've been reading.
Oh, they could use him, because it looked like Drew Holiday was going to give them some hope. They've lost 3 in a row now, so they're still the Pelicans.
And I don't know how far out he is. I just know been keeping up on fantasy tabs with some of the players, and he's one of the players in the fantasy leagues. You know, nobody owns right now, but I was reading some of the notes on him, and it sounds like they're very optimistic. There's no time, no date set, but it sounds like it's getting close. So that could be nice, you know, have the duo of Evans and Davis maybe do something for the Pelicans, but I still don't think that helps them much. But no, to your point though, back to the top eight in the West, you know, you're talking about, I mean, the Jazz are right now still on pace to win that 49-50 games. And right now they're in the 7th seed. I mean, that's mm-hmm. you're projected that you could have 6, maybe 7 out of the 8 Western teams have 50 wins. That's monster. That's big.
Wow, you're right. Jazz are exactly on pace for a 50-32 season.
Yeah.
Just did the math.
Yeah, I'm just, cool. I mean, they're right there on pace at 14-9. They're on pace for 50 wins, and they're in the 7th seed. Guys, that's how good the West is right now. You've got 7 out of 8 teams on pace for 50 wins, and that eighth team being Portland is not far out of the picture there either.
There was a year, and I want to say it was Scott Brooks' first year, the first year that Durant and Harden and Westbrook made the playoffs. I think they were an 8 seed, 50-32 team.
Yep.
If I remember right.
I think you're right. I'd have to go back and look at it too, but I think you're right.
I don't know how Memphis is doing it, but I thought they would fall without Conley. Maybe Marc Gasol is just that good that they're not falling down the ranks. Also means it's going to be that much scarier when Conley returns.
And then you go back to the East, and you've got three teams right now in the East that are good, maybe four.
Oh, but, it's their schedule. Never mind.
But you've got what? In the East, you've got the Cavaliers. I don't know how Toronto is schedule-wise, but I would imagine Toronto's right up there near the top. Boston. But then you've got Miami and Chicago right there in the middle of the pack. And then after those four or five teams... No, wait, not Miami. Sorry. I said Miami. Chicago. But after those top four or five teams, nobody.
Well, right now, the eighth seed in the East has a winning record, and that's the Pistons at 12-11.
Okay.
But, you know, I see a lot of fluctuation down there. I mean,
yes.
The Knicks are 12-9 right now. I can't believe the Knicks are tied for the third seed right now. That's kind of how thin the East is, because they have that makes them a half game better than the eighth seed Blazers. So, you know, they're going to be thin. They're going to be a lot of teams in the 40s wins that are going to make the playoffs in the East.
Yes. And I know I had to correct myself on that, because Devin gave me the weird look, and I realized after he did, I had said Miami and didn't mean Miami. That was my mistake. I meant Chicago.
You thought Wade, and it happens.
Yeah, I did. I caught myself. Thanks to your look.
Was it yesterday that they announced Rajon Rondo was going to be suspended a game by the team?
Yes.
For conduct detrimental. Does that surprise anybody?
Nope.
Nope.
It's like the seventh time it's happened in the past 5 years. So no, but I mean, it happens. We did it last week with the podcast. We said Alan was sick and it was actually a suspension.
Hey, whoa.
He said that the Jazz would not fall below 500.
Okay, don't.
And then when it happened, it was, no, Alan, take a week off.
Devin, wow. Yeah. No. We're always picking on the intern. Now you're just going to turn that on me? Really? And John's just enjoying this and gonna laugh the whole time at it. Thanks, John. You got my back. I got you.
I sure do. Unless you're going against Devin, so he's a producer.
All right, put your arms
producers
down.
Like
quit
house.
Flexing.
The house always wins.
Quit flexing, all right. Devin. All right. Anything else you want to discuss, East versus West?
No, let's look ahead now.
Okay.
The Jazz, their next game is against Golden State. And this is a game that I was feeling pretty good about until I watched Hood go down and watched what happened there. So, you know, now it's going to be, we're waiting in suspense. Will Hill play? Will Hood play? Will Favors play? Will none of them play? It's a home game. I can't say I feel good about it. I the only way I'd feel good about it is if Hill and Hood were both able to come back.
Devin's got, you know, he's ready.
I'm going to put your mind at ease right now.
Okay.
The Jazz are going to unleash a secret weapon in this game.
It's not Sandiata Gaines this time. You're going ballin' boy, aren't you?
They have a new starting five.
Who?
They're going to start Neto, Ingles, mm-hmm. Ballin' boy, Withy, and whoever else is on the bench that I can't think of right now.
All right.
And they're just going to rest everyone and let's just get healthy, because this is not going to go well for the Jazz right now.
Shut her down.
They're going to pull a Spurs. They're going to put DNP old or something. DNP Warriors, you know, whatever they need to do.
Yeah.
But I mean, really, there's no point in rushing guys back if they're not ready.
No, there isn't.
If Rod is not 100%, then don't play him. If Favors is not there yet, don't play him. Same with Hill, because really, you don't want those guys coming back, re-aggravating an injury, kind of like what we saw with Derek earlier in the season, and then being out again. You know, take the extra couple days if you need it.
I will say this. if it's 116 to 80 by the end of the third quarter, like last night with Klay Thompson 60 by the end of the third, you might as well bench, you might as well just sit everybody, rest them all the fourth quarter and go with that deep, deep bench there, because you're not going to come back and you might as well just, you know, not put up the white flag, whatever it is, rest guys. And then against Sacramento, I'm not sure the Jazz really need to put out their starting lineup out against Sacramento too either. I mean, Sacramento's just not a very good team either. And I don't think they should have a problem at home. So
we say that every right. year, and every year Sacramento gives us problems. It seems like
I know.
I don't know why.
No, because it's no. DeMarcus Cousins gives us problems, not Sacramento.
The Jazz end up. It seems like they lose at least one game, if not two games, every year to Sacramento. It seems like
I'm not going to discount that.
It
You're
feels
right.
like it should never happen, and yet it does. So, yeah, I don't know. Don't put too many points into your Warriors basket. That game is just, it's not right. going to be a pleasant game, but very few teams are going to have a good night against the Warriors, especially now that they seem to finally be putting it together a little bit.
And by the way, if you're not going to be there, you should be. I know the Jazz released tickets the other day for it. I'm going to be there, but it's the only time the Warriors are coming to Salt Lake this year. The only time. So it's worthwhile to watch. It's worthwhile to be there. It's Steph. It's KD. Win or lose, it's still going to be fun to watch. But, John, I mean, how do you see the next two games play out? Jazz, I'm saying 1-1.
Yeah, I'd say that too. The Jazz are just too injured right now to be able to put up a decent fight against the Warriors. But with the extra time by the time Sacramento gets here, I do expect, you know, at least one of those guys, Hillhood and Favors, to be back in. And if you have Hayward plus one of those three guys, that ought to be good enough team overall to beat the Kings at home. But it's just depressing. We're still in this cycle of just waiting for everyone to get healthy so this team can truly be what we know they are. I mean, you know, they look to me like if everyone was healthy, this is a home court playoff team. And it's just a matter of waiting until they all get there.
It's funny because we talked about this with our season preview, and we talked so much about last year's injuries. And, oh, you know, the Jazz can't possibly be as injured as they were last year when they were missing Burks and they were missing Exum for the season. And here we are, early December, and it feels like we're maybe worse off injury-wise than we were last year. And yet the Jazz are still staying afloat through it. So as bad as it seems and as frustrating as it seems with the loss that we had to Miami and a few that have kind of gotten away this year, Jazz fans really should be pretty happy with the product that we have right now and the depth and the improvement that we had this offseason.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, they've played 23 games now. George Hill has only played in 11 of those. Derek Favors has only played in 11 of those. Hayward played in 16 of those. Hood's played in 20, but he's missed a half a game in two of those. So yeah, it's just like, I think the Jazz were built to be able to handle injuries to their bench. And they're built to be able to handle a starter getting injured. I guess I should say they're still built to have multiple injuries because they're still a playoff team. I mean, with all the injuries they're going through, they're still a playoff team. It's just a matter of how good a playoff team. So if they get a ton of injuries, okay, so they're a road playoff team. If everyone could just get healthy, they're a home playoff team. I mean, that's what the season's coming down to, it looks like.
Do you realize with all that in mind, I'm looking at the rest of the month's schedule, the Jazz still could hit the 20 to 21 win mark by the end of the month. Mm-hmm. And still have themselves be 7 or 8 games, 8 or 9 games, somewhere around there over 500 by the end of the month, by the new year. That's not a bad, with all the injuries they've dealt with, if you'd have told me at the beginning of the year, I mean, we all predicted But if you'd have told me Hill was going to be down for a stretch, Hayward down for a stretch, you start naming it off, rattling off guys that'll be down for a stretch, and you tell me that by January 1st, the Jazz are going to be, say, 21-13 or 20-14 or 20, you know, somewhere around there, I would have said, wait, whoa, really? Wow.
Well, think about it this way. We made all of our predictions. I believe I was at 50 wins is what I said the Jazz would win, and that was with a healthy team. We are on pace for 50 wins with a far from healthy team.
Right.
So when we think about it in that context, you can't be that upset. Yeah, it's frustrating, and you really wish you had everyone there. But, John, if you had predicted that the Jazz won 50 wins and they go through all these injuries and they end up winning 49, you're going to feel really good about that, I think, at the end of the year. Are you not?
Yeah. I was just looking at my predictions, and I had the Jazz going 50-32, but I had that good enough as the fourth seed. And that's 50-32 is not going to be the fourth seed. I'll just say that.
No, it's not. I mean, and there again, we didn't have Houston where they were at right now. We didn't have Oklahoma City where they were at right now. I think all of us predicted that the Jazz could likely take their own division, but Westbrook is playing out of his mind.
Well, they're about where I thought they would be. I figured, you know, we all predicted Westbrook was going to be in the MVP talks, that he was going to have this amazing year. But their record is still about even with the Jazz, and they haven't had near the injury issues Jazz have had. So, you know, I think they're playing about what I thought they were going to. I guess I got to talk about the Rockets some more, because, you know, how much of this credit should go to Mike D'Antoni? Rockets got rid of Kevin McHale last year. I want to say they had an intern. Didn't they fire him in the middle of the season? And it was Bickerstaff.
Yes.
Finished the season. Yeah. So D'Antoni comes in and the team just looks so much better now. Maybe part of that's Dwight being gone and them having better chemistry. I mean, they didn't change the roster that much. But by moving Harden to point and playing the D'Antoni system, it's working great. And D'Antoni, who, you know, looked terrible with the Lakers and Knicks, he's revived his, you know, his reputation took a hit with those, but now that he's on the Rockets and it's all coming alive again, it's like, ah, this is the D'Antoni from the Suns that we were hoping we were going to get, and it's working out for them.
It helps that he has guys that can just knock down threes night in and night out. I mean, they're draining threes like they're layups.
Yeah.
So, I mean, yeah, I don't know. It's just some things to put in perspective. You're right. The West is just so heavy. Just so heavy right now, and there's so much to look forward to ahead of us. I mean, are the Jazz going to reach 50 games? I still am confident in saying they will. Is it going to be good enough for the fourth seed? You're right. It probably won't be. It's just going to be an interesting stretch of games going the rest of the way, especially with injuries. So, all right, let's shift gears. Let's jump into listener questions. Okay, John, we had few responses today, 4 or 5 responses and listener questions today.
Yep.
Let's go ahead and rattle them off.
Let me find. Okay. Is Gordon Hayward making his way into your all-time Jazz starting lineup? Making his way? Yes, he is.
Yes. I would agree with that too. That comes to us from Joshua Bill. Yes, Joshua, I'm starting to definitely fit him into my all-time starting five for the Jazz. Absolutely.
Well, if you figure he's trying to push out your small forwards. So if you're looking at your small forwards, you're looking at Kirilenko, I guess, right now is their best small forward they've had. Or
Dantley?
Earl Bailey, or I guess Dantley would have been a small forward. Dantley, yeah.
Dantley's a hard one to push out. He might be the best the Jazz have had at that forward position. Would you agree?
Yeah. I mean, Dantley was an amazing scorer, but I'm wondering if Hayward's working his way into being just the better all-around player.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree with that.
I'd have to go back and look at some Dantley stats. But yeah, you're right.
Greg Foster or
when he was scoring the way he was doing.
No Greg Foster or Garbage Man? I mean, come on, guys. I'm just going back over the 97-98 Jazz teams with their small forwards. My bad.
Was Foster a small forward?
No, he was more power forward / center. I know. I'm just joking.
Are you getting rid of Brian Russell?
No, I'm not getting rid of Brian Russell either.
Are you forgetting B. Russ?
No, and I'm really only kidding. B. Russ is the one other guy that was on that might be on that list. I mean, he was a good starting small forward.
Yeah, good save. Good. Next question
He was known as one of the. Okay.
He was what?
Would you rather snow every day for a year or have it be over 100 degrees every day for a year?
I already responded to Zach on Twitter for this one, Zach Roddy. Dude, that's just not a fair question. But if I had to choose, I'd probably snow every day versus 100 degrees every day. Although I hate both of them.
It's totally snow.
I hate
snow.
Both, but I think I would go for 100 degrees.
No, you are wrong.
See, John, see how quickly it is Devin changes sides. A minute ago, he was defending you, and now you went opposite, and now he's attacking you.
We can talk about the weather.
I've got like a 30-mile commute for work, and the thought of it snowing every day for a year, I just...
Okay, and see, he's making a fair point. Yes, he is. And I recognize that. But the fact is, when it's 100 degrees, it is just miserable, and there's really not much you can do about it. When it's snowing, you can at least, you know, put on a coat.
Yes. Or you can curl up under a blanket in the house and just watch movies all day.
Chestnuts roasting on an open fire.
All right, next question. Let's go to good friend Blair Red on Twitter.
Which big loses the most minutes when Favors comes back? Diaw, really, because...
Yeah.
He's been starting for him.
Wrong.
And I would have said it would have been Diaw a while back. But I the way Diaw's been coming on of late, I'm making a hard case that maybe he doesn't. Is it going to be Jeff Withey, maybe?
It's Withey. Withey's not going to see any time.
Yeah. Because you're not going to take minutes away from Lyles.
Oh, yeah. I was thinking positional, but you're right. They'd probably have Diaw play backup center. And so Withey would be the one who – Withey will probably start getting DMPs once Favors comes back.
Agreed. Because watching the way that Boris is playing lately, you can't make a case to give him less minutes. I mean, look at tonight. He had 5 assists through 2.5 quarters tonight, and they were beautiful assists too, might I add. So you can't make a case for him losing a lot of minutes when Favors comes back. Devin's right. You almost have to go with you.
Yeah. That makes total sense. I think it'll be with
okay.
Next one. Is Hayward finally going to be the superstar we need, or is this just a good start that will sputter out? I do not think this is going to sputter out. I think Hayward has moved on to the next level. This is who he is now. And I expect him to be like a 22 points a night guy all year. He had 28 tonight.
Yeah. No, I agree. He had 28 tonight?
Yeah. He had 3 in a row of scoring 30. If he had just made all his free throws, he would have had 30 tonight. He missed 2 free throws, I think.
Yeah, no, and you go back to last night against the Lakers. He drops 12 in the third quarter last night after an 8-point first half, and he was well on his way to 30 again, but then they really didn't need him to in the fourth quarter last night, and he really...
Oh, he missed... Yeah.
What did he end up with last night? I forgot.
Lakers... Give me just a second.
Okay. So last night might be the anomaly, if you will, of the last 4 games. You know, tonight he had nearly 30. He had 30 for 3. So last night he had 23, a modest 23. So no, I agree. I think this is what we're going to get from Hayward going forward. There's watching what he's doing in his game. It's magnificent. He has stepped it up this year, and a lot of people could say, well, It's because Hill's played. But well, guess what? He just dropped 30 three games in a row without Hill in the game. I think Hayward has turned it up a notch, and I think we're going to see this from him the rest of the season.
Okay, slow down.
Yeah, and someone else stepping up is Rudy Gobert. Rudy tonight was 22 points, 11 rebounds, 4 blocks. He was a plus 20.
10 of 11 from the free throw line.
Yeah. Yeah, him working on his free throw shooting over the summer has just completely opened up his career. I mean, all those times last year when Quinn was taking Rudy out at the end of the fourth quarter for offense, that will never happen again. It's like the only reason Rudy would be taken out now is because he really likes the small ball matchups and favors is right. Doing a good enough job in there. But there are going to be more nights than not that I think Gobert is still going to be the big that wins out because his defense is so much better and his offense is such that, well, hey, if he gets fouled, he can make his free throws.
Okay, Devin, so I want you to finish your thought.
Okay, here's the thing about Hayward. We need to be very careful in terms of using the word superstar.
Okay.
Because when you think superstar, I think that puts these thoughts in your mind of LeBron James, of Steph Curry, of Russell Westbrook. Hayward has turned it up a notch to the all-star level, and I think he will be an all-star this year.
But some people would argue that Paul George is a superstar. Yes, no.
Pre-injury Paul George, yeah, but since he's come back, I don't know. I haven't followed closely enough to really say. Hayward, I think, can keep this up, but what it is going to depend on is who he is surrounded by. Because if the Jazz have extended injuries like what they've had, I think you will see his stats dip over the course of the year. It really depends how everyone else is doing on the team, because what he's run into in the past few seasons is he has been the go-to guy and teams have been able to just limit him. And that's why it is so important for him to have a Hill or have Hood
right.
or someone like that on the court. If everyone can stay healthy, that takes some of the pressure off him. I think you'll see him keep this up, but it's also going to come down to how many minutes is he having to play?
Right.
You know, how physical is he having to play? Because you're seeing Hayward play some really physical ball, and it's great to see. And he's definitely, you know, added the muscle mass to do that.
Right.
But the concern with that is always the risk for injury, you know, a shoulder injury or a finger injury like what he had earlier this year.
Right.
There's a lot more possibility for that, it seems like, with this new physical brand of ball that he's playing. So
you're asking folks to just pump your brakes just a little bit.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, he's been phenomenal.
Yeah, he has.
You know, these 30-point outings, the way he was knocking down his free throws, the law of averages seems to be kind of coming into play. He's missed more tonight, the last night against the Lakers. So don't be shocked when those stats come down a little bit.
Until he gets healthy help.
But when he gets help, yeah, if he's not putting up those stats and he's got healthy people around him, it's because the Jazz brand of basketball.
Agreed.
It's because other Agreed. People are going to be getting those looks and getting those shots. And, you know, there's only going to be so many shots to take. He's not Russell Westbrook on an island.
Nope,
and
I agree.
That's not what the Jazz are about. So if the numbers come down, don't panic. That's all I'm going to say.
John, anything to add there?
Yeah, we don't really have a good definition for superstar, but when you think of superstar, you're probably only thinking NBA can't have more than 7 or 8 of those at a time. And I wouldn't say he's one of the top 7 or 8, but when you think of just all-star, you know, him and Hill have been having all-star worthy seasons. And another way the West is stacked is you look at potential all-star picks. There are so many good players in the West that, you know, it's still possible that no one from the Jazz makes the all-star team again. But, you know, if he keeps having 30-point games, he's kind of hard to leave out.
And by the way, we know you listen to this. Steve Kerr, you listen to our show. We know you do. So when it comes to picking the rest of your team after the fans do, because, hey, let's face it, you're going to be the coach of the All-Star or of the West, because unless something horrible happens and Golden State doesn't have the best record. So please, Steve Kerr, just reach out to Gordon and bring him into the fold, because you know you want him on your team.
If it's not Gordon, we really could see Rudy Gobert as an all-star this season.
That's another great point.
Yeah.
You won't see Hill. As much as he might deserve it, the injuries are one thing, but the fact that there are so many good guards out west, it's just not happening.
Yeah.
Nope, I agree.
It's still, yeah, you got Curry, Paul, Westbrook, Lillard, I mean, too many.
Harden.
Yep. Yeah.
So, okay. There is one more question that Tyler asked, but I want to save it until pop culture, because I think it's a good question to ask and I want to hear your thoughts on it. But I think that does it for listener questions. So let's jump into our next segment, Devin with quick hits. All right, Devin.
All right. Klay Thompson went off in the outing last night, 60 points in the game. I believe he only played through three quarters, we discussed. So I just wanted to ask, if you are building a new franchise and you can draft one player from the Warriors, who would you take, Steph Curry or Klay Thompson?
Steph Curry.
I'd still take Steph.
Interesting. I would take Klay. All right. Let's see here. There's got to be some more NBA stuff. Russell Westbrook, the way he is average, is he still averaging a triple double? I believe.
Yep,
he is.
Yep, five in a row.
Okay.
Yep.
So I just need to ask, man or machine?
Let's just put him on Darth Vader level, man and machine. I mean, holy crap.
Man on a mission.
Yeah, man on a mission's more like it.
As of yesterday, it was six in a row.
Or no, six in a row, you're right.
There are only three people who have gotten more than that for consecutive triple-doubles.
Jordan's one of them.
Jordan, Oscar Robertson, and Wilt Chamberlain.
And judging by what you just said, I was going to go with the next on this anyway. Jordan was the last one to do it in the 89 season. Just to give you an idea, that's 27 years ago was the last time this was done. That's insane. That's something special.
Okay.
Yeah, still there. 31, 11, and 11.
We've talked a little basketball. Let's jump over to some hoops. College football playoff is set. You're going to have the semifinals, Alabama against Washington, and you are going to have Ohio State playing Clemson. I don't want your picks yet, because I'm sure we're going to discuss this in several weeks. But right now I want to know, did the committee get it right?
Yes.
Yes.
Even with Ohio State, even though they did not even play in their conference championship.
Yeah, because Penn State lost twice. And when you look at those teams and how they run their schedules, you have your one undefeated team and then you have three one-loss teams. And, you know, going by their strength of schedules, I think that matters against the two-loss teams. I don't see how you can justify putting Penn State in over Ohio State. I know the excuse would be Penn State won the conference game, but I'd still make the case that even though Penn State beat Ohio State, Ohio State is still overall the better team. And this is what I hate about sports that have such a small playoff window. I wish they'd look into somehow making this eight seed playoffs, but you know, this is still a better system than it used to be. Can you imagine them looking at this and saying, okay, who's going to play in the national championship? And it probably would have been Alabama and Clemson. And then there'd be all kinds of people going, why wasn't Ohio State picked? Why wasn't Washington picked? You know, they're right even with them.
Yeah, no. Definitely an improvement.
No, and I agree with everything John said. I mean, you know, you look at it, and I know Penn State might say they have an argument, and I can understand that, but that might be an argument for, like John said, going eight teams now. But with that said, if Penn State gets the nod, who do you take out? You take Ohio State out, but yet Ohio State's schedule says otherwise. Who do you take out? Washington? Well, Washington's had their... You know, some people could argue that their early on schedule wasn't that tough, but you look at the Pac-12, most of the teams they've played in the Pac-12 have been ranked.
Right. Their out-of-conference schedule was weak, but they did play Colorado. They played Utah.
Yep.
They beat Stanford.
Yep. And their only loss on the year was to who again? It was
to USC.
To USC.
Late in the season.
Yeah, who made a case for being a very good, strong team down the stretch. You can't... I don't know that you can make enough of a case against any of the four teams to turn around and put Penn State in place of them. You just can't.
Okay. Another college football topic. I'm not sure if you guys saw this. John, you may want to pull it up. But did you see the Army uniforms for the Army versus Navy game this week?
No.
I would like you to pull up the Army uniforms. Now this is on the Army Equipment Twitter handle. It was posted by
the paratroopers.
Yes, based on the 82nd Airborne. Now I need to throw out and kind of do a nod here. I was very into this because my grandfather actually served with the 82nd Airborne in World War II. And so these uniforms are possibly my favorite uniforms ever.
You know, my grandfather flew in World War II, but I don't know who he flew from. Now I want to find out who he flew with. That's cool. Yeah, these are really cool looking uniforms.
Yeah, Alan's got it pulled up here.
Which ones are they?
They're the
black ones?
Yes. They've got the black helmets, and they've got the different badges, if you will, based on like the different infantries or whatever the terminology is. I apologize if I'm completely wrong in that.
Do you see their helmets?
Yeah, the helmets are sick.
Holy crap. No, I like a lot. Wow. So no, that's impressive.
Very cool. I thought wanted to bring it up. Go ahead. You know, if you're listening to the show, go online, check these out. But I want to see what they look like on the field. Because I believe that not only the badges, but the emblem on the side of the helmets may vary as well.
It looks like that. SB Nation photo, judging by what they've posted, it looks like they're going to be different per. That's pretty cool. I'd watch that game just for the uniforms.
Yeah, they didn't have his infantry or his company or whatever it was. But I reached out to them on Twitter and didn't get a response yet to see if you can buy like the jerseys, because I need one of these jerseys, or I need one of those helmets at least, like the replicas.
Yeah. I was going to say helmet or jersey. It'd be cool to go out and purchase one of them just for keepsake reasons.
Right. Right. So very cool. Throwing that out there. I don't believe the Heisman is getting announced this week, so we'll save that. We'll talk about that later. Quick couple hits on NFL.
Are you sure the Heisman's not getting announced? I thought it's this coming Saturday.
Is it this Saturday?
I'm pretty sure.
Fine, we'll do it now. Who is your Heisman pick? Is it anyone besides Lamar Jackson? Some of the people that are there, Jabril Peppers out of Michigan. Deshaun Watson out of Clemson. There's a quarterback and a wide receiver, I believe, from Oklahoma. I do not have their
names.
Baker
Mayfield.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm looking at the finalists right now.
Let's see. Yeah. Baker Mayfield's the quarterback, and then their receiver, D. Westbrook. So those five guys. And yeah, it's Saturday.
And I'm still going to go Lamar Jackson. Deshaun Watson, I still think, are my top two. And I have to say Lamar Jackson takes it.
Okay, it sounds like we're all on the same page. One thing I'm kind of, I don't know. How do you feel about Jake Browning being left off? Alan just wants to talk about Lamar Jackson.
No, they're, I don't. Go ahead, John. What was that?
I don't really care that much about the Heisman. I mean, he had a really good year. He'll probably get drafted really high, but, you know, I'm not.
I didn't.
If they left him off, fine. If he made it, fine.
I didn't keep up on enough of it either.
All right. NFL real quick. Two teams that are front runners right now, Dallas Cowboys and the Oakland Raiders. What a difference a season or two makes. I just wondered, do you guys think, I mean, at this point in the year, are one of these teams going to win the Super Bowl?
Hard to make a case against either one of them really right now.
I mean,
I don't see anybody in the AFC beating Oakland to get to the Super Bowl. And I don't know that anybody in the NFC, I think there's one team that might challenge Dallas for that NFC top spot, and that's Seattle. But beyond that, I don't know if anybody is going to challenge Dallas in the playoffs.
Dallas looks like, yeah, I think the NFC is Dallas's to lose, but Seattle being second. Seattle was my early pick for the Super Bowl, and they can still do it. But when you consider that Dallas, they're just one Terrence Williams brain fart away from being undefeated this year. you know, it'll be super impressive if Seattle gets past them, especially when Seattle's kind of had an up and down season. I mean, they're 8-3, but it's still looked uneven for them to get there to that point. And in the AFC, you know, Patriots are still the Patriots. Know they've had a lot of problems with wide receivers this year, but you can't really dismiss the Patriots ever. So I think the final four is going to be the Patriots and Raiders, and then the Cowboys and Seahawks. And, you know, much as I hate to pick against the Seahawks, the Cowboys have been just so good on offense that, yeah, I mean, you could easily see a Raiders-Cowboys Super Bowl.
You know what? You brought up the Patriots, and I completely forgot about them. And how could I? That's the crazy thing. The Raiders, the thing is this is another example of why the AFC is clearly the better conference in football right now, too. How many teams across the AFC are just that good? The Chiefs, the Raiders, the Broncos aren't. They're not free-falling entirely. They've been playing okay.
They're a wild card at this
point. Yeah, but you've got so many teams in the AFC that are just so solid. It's so good. But then there's the Patriots. And you've got Tom Brady, who's already cementing himself as legendary. All-time winningest quarterback in NFL history already. Won more games than anybody else. I mean, and I know, Broncos fan, I know you don't want to hear this, Devin, but it's true. What Tom Brady's doing is crazy. And if he wins another Super Bowl, it might be hard to argue against the fact that maybe he's the best quarterback to play the game.
If there weren't scandals, then maybe you could have that argument, but you know.
I knew you were going to say something like that.
I was. Okay, let's jump from the best to the worst. Who will have the number one pick in the NFL? Will it be Cleveland, or will a team out of the Bay Area?
You mean the 49ers?
I do mean the 49ers.
Well, Cleveland would have to actually win a game to have that be possible.
Exactly.
And I just don't see it happening. I think Cleveland's going to go 0-16.
Agreed.
Oh, that's painful. That is painful. Okay.
Yep.
And let's do one more sport, a little bit of baseball. And I know that many of us are not big baseball fans, but the Yankees will be retiring number two for Derek Jeter. With that, the organization will have retired all single digit numbers. Little fun fact for you.
Mm.
How long until they start doubling up on players where they have to bring the number out of retirement, or do we go to like a triple digit baseball uniform? Do we start using letters?
Well, when your sport's been around for like 140 years, maybe you should start bringing numbers in and out of retirement. And if so, that second guys can where the number, and then if they're good enough, then you can have two names retired to the number. And I'm kind of thinking what BYU did with Ty Detmer and Gifford Nielsen. They're both 14, and so they're both able to be retired with number 14. So I think in these other sports where you've been around longer and you're able to collect so many good players, that might have to be the option. I would prefer that option to, you know, having baseball players wearing 107.
I agree. My only question to this is, why does the number even matter? The name on the jersey is what everybody cares about, so why does it even matter for the number?
Well, jersey retirement's a way to honor people, but I also look at some young teams. Like, I think the Jazz retired a couple numbers a little too easily just because they were a young franchise and wanted to get some banners up there. But I think as the decades go on and these teams are older and you're having more and more retired jerseys, that'll be something they're looking at where they're like, well, maybe we need to unretire numbers for certain guys here and there just so that we can feel the team.
it's one of those things with jersey retirements. You think about Shaq. Shaq's got a banner in L.A. He's getting a banner in Miami. Yeah, does he really deserve a banner in Miami? He was there for how many seasons? I get that he brought a championship, but come on.
Yeah.
You know, yeah. Are you going to give him one in Phoenix? And then we're going to put one in Cleveland and one in Boston. I mean, we're just going to have like the Shaq jersey retirement tour.
Hey, Miami needs some awesome numbers to retire, okay? They haven't had a lot of guys come through there that have been influential over the years. Come on.
I'm just saying. I get where John's coming from. Sometimes it's like, really?
I know.
Okay, that's it for quick hits this week.
Okay. All right, let's wrap this show up. Let's talk a little pop culture. John, let's go with, first of all, one of the listener questions. Before we get into your main topic, let's go back to one of our listener questions. Tyler asked if we've seen the movie Hush. I was going to ask you, have you seen it?
You know, I watched the first half of it the other day, and I am looking forward to watching the rest of it, but I haven't finished it yet.
What are your initial thoughts?
I'm enjoying it. That's probably not a good idea to watch a thriller in chunks. It's probably better if I just rewatch the whole thing so I can see the whole thing in one sitting and get the feel of it. But it's good so far. I'm really enjoying it.
Okay. I have never seen it, but I did look at the trailer today after it was asked, and I read a little bit of the synopsis, the premise of the story, and I'm intrigued. Very intrigued by the idea, but I haven't seen it. So, again, Tyler and everybody who brought questions, thanks for all your questions. We appreciate them. John, you wanted to talk. Apparently, the talk of the town on Twitter lately has been Westworld. You want to talk about Westworld?
Yeah. I watched the whole season, and this is like HBO's next big prestige drama that they hope becomes the talk of the town since Game of Thrones is winding down and other projects that they've tried haven't really taken off like they'd hoped. I really enjoyed this. And the thing about Westworld, it was kind of uneven, but it set up very nicely for season two. And it's like season one was a giant puzzle box of what does this all mean? And they answered a lot of those questions in the season finale. And so now season two is the where do we go from here? And in some ways, season one felt like heavy lifting just to set us up for a really cool season two. But I really like where they ended season one and just all the possibilities they can go with season two. Now, for people who don't know, Westworld is a series in the near future where they have created this giant expansive park set after a Western town where they have a bunch of lifelike robots who are there. And so the ultra rich can go into Westworld and they can do whatever they want. They can get into shootouts. They can go sleep with whores in the saloon. They can, you know, go hunt Indians. They can go look for treasure. There's just all kinds of possibilities there. And there's really this dark undertone to it, because there are a lot of people who go to the park who just engage in decadence, just have sex with the robots and shoot the robots and do all kinds of things. And the robots, every time they get killed, they have their memory erased and they're reset with their narrative in mind. But some of the robots, their memory isn't getting completely erased, and they're getting more and more aware of stuff that's happened to them and more horrified, because the robots don't really realize they're robots. They feel like they're alive, but some of them are starting to get awareness that they are stuck in this loop and that they're actually artificial. And so there are a lot of existential questions in it about, you know, what does it truly mean to be alive? What does it truly mean to have consciousness? And the acting's been great this year. Anthony Hopkins has just been amazing as the inventor of the park. Jeffrey Wright was really good as the head programmer, and he has some of his own twists. So it was, I understand why some people didn't like it, but I would argue that taken as a whole, season one was really good. They laid out all these questions and they answered most of them, and they've set themselves up in a really strong position on where they go with episode two. Or season two.
You had Devin at, what was it?
Something about a saloon. And then,
whores and saloons, and then sex with robots.
John, this is a family podcast.
Yeah, you said whores and saloons, and Devin just went, huh? And then you said sex with robots, and Devin went, oh.
Okay. Yeah, it's on HBO.
There was no "oh" about it.
What's that, John?
I said it's on HBO, so HBO will have gratuitous sex scenes just for the sake of it. Where you're like, there'll be like sex going on in the background. And you're like, hey, you back there? We really don't need you for this scene. Oh, we're on HBO. I guess we kind of have to have it.
It's like the extras for HBO. Are you willing to have sex? Yes, you're hired as an extra.
Yep. I also did see another movie this week. I saw Allied with Brad Pitt and Marion Cotillard. It was directed by Robert Zemeckis. It's a World War II movie.
That one looks good.
I had high hopes.
Oh, no.
It actually wasn't very good.
Oh, no.
It's beautifully shot. I could see it getting nominated for like best costumes. And Zemeckis is a wonderful technical director, but the movie really lives and dies on whether or not the two leads have chemistry, and they didn't. I just did not like Brad Pitt's performance in this. I was really disappointed with it. He plays a spy who goes into Nazi-occupied France. He meets up with a French spy in there, and they pose as husband and wife while they're planning the assassination of a German ambassador. After their mission is complete, he suddenly proposes to her, and I was just like, wait a minute, what? I completely missed the part where he fell in love with her, but apparently he did. And so then they get married, and some time passes, and then he's informed by British intelligence that they believe his wife is actually a Nazi spy, and so he's supposed to spy on her. And so it aspires to be this sweeping, epic wartime romance spy thriller thing. But I never really bought into Brad Pitt's performance. I don't know. I didn't believe that he actually fell in love with her. And there are levels to spies where there's the act they're putting on for other people, and then there's who the spy really is. And Marion Cotillard did a really good job with that. And I was buying her performance at whatever layer she was showing us. And I just didn't get the same from Pitt. And, you know, if they don't have chemistry, then the rest of it just isn't going to work. no matter how technically good you are.
Yep.
Well, shoot.
I will say this too. Since we last spoke, I took the family. We went and saw Moana. Excellent, excellent show. I recommend it for all families. Really enjoyed it. Disney's newest animated feature film. And I thought, you know, it takes on the Polynesian cultural theme. And I thought it was very well done. You know, obviously you have, you know, it's quite an interesting cast. Auli Cravalho, I don't even know her name, plays Moana. Dwayne Johnson plays the god in the movie Maui. Alan Tudyk, we all know Alan Tudyk, he plays a part in this film. Nicole Scherzinger and then Star Wars fans might remember Temuera Morrison, who played the part of Jango Fett and the clones in Attack of the Clones, was the voice of the father, Chief Tui in this show. So a show that my wife and kids immediately got the soundtrack after we left. The music was phenomenal. The movie was a wonderful family story. Really beautiful story. Well done. So I recommend it to anybody who has not seen Moana yet. You want to know something to take your kids to for the holiday season. It's a great show. Really great show. So I don't know if you've had a chance to see that one yet or not.
I have not had a chance to see it, but I'm looking forward to it. Most of the big animated movies, I kind of wait for on demand because it's cheaper to show it to all my kids that way.
Yeah.
Like I just saw Finding Dory for the first time last week. And so, you know, it was cool. I liked it. I had some problems with some plot devices they did, but yeah, that's good.
Yeah. So there you go. That's your movie wrap up for the week. Some movies worth checking out, especially with the holidays coming around. If you're not going to see Star Wars Rogue One, which comes out in 9 days, by the time everybody listens to it, we'll be down to 8 days. But anyway, I know what I'll be doing.
8 days until Collateral Beauty opens.
What's that?
Oh, are you talking about something else? The sound kind of went out.
No, I said Rogue One.
Oh, Rogue One. Yeah, that too.
Anyway, we want to thank everybody for joining us. We appreciate all of our listener questions this week. We had a good group of questions to discuss this week. So thank you all who provided those questions. We appreciate your feedback. Thanks for joining us for yet another wonderful edition of Jedi and Germs. We can't tell you how much we appreciate all of you. We enjoy doing this. Look for us on iTunes and Stitcher, Blog Talk Radio, Facebook, Twitter, all at Jedi and Germs. You know, you can contact us, send us your thoughts, questions anytime. Leave us reviews on iTunes. We appreciate it. And thank you all for joining us. We'll talk to you again next week. In the meantime, John, take us out.
Bye, everybody.